This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This is C.A. Nuri, and I'm sitting in for Erin Green. And Erin Green is actually home, and she's going to be joining us via Zoom. However, this is On The Clock. It's Monday, March 20th, 2023, and On The Clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand and impact public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On The Clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate our rapidly changing Bahamas. Erin sent me some questions. And as she joined me on Zoom, I'm going to read these questions because I'm going to put these questions to her. She could put it to me, so I'll put it back to her. She asks, should Brave fire Glenys Hannah-Martin? Does her statement warrant removal from the cabinet? Does Brave have to fire Glenys Hannah-Martin? Does she have to? Okay. And if there is any breach of any ministerial code, the PM can always waive the breach, right? Does it matter what she says if she votes with the administration party? Does Brave have to fire Glenys Hannah-Martin to reserve the Davis-Cooper administration? What about LaRota? Sayers, BPL, Pinder, Mr. Cannabis, and Wilshcombe, Mr. MR. Is the PM a Christie PLP or an Ingram PLP? That's a deep question, Erin. Is it a matter of heart or brains? Was Perry Glasson Christie a cowardly leader, or was HAI, Hubert Alexander Miller, a tyrant? Ministers fired four cabinet ministers for voting against VAT, despite futility of the dissent. And these are some of the questions that I'm going to put towards Erin. And she goes on a list of questions. She even mentioned Fitzgerald, Pinder, and goes on. But I want to engage her because she normally has some housekeeping stuff that we got to engage first. But this is where our questions are going to be going on The Clock. Erin, are you there? Did you get to connect with me as yet?
Good morning. Good yawning this morning, Mr. Nuri, to the Bahamas and to the Guardian Radio audience. How you doing?
I'm doing well. But Cousin Erin. They said they need to fire Glenys Hannah-Martin. And this is where I'm asking you these type of questions.
Well, listen, I'm glad we got the questions out there first before you said that heavy statement, because I couldn't swear you just said Brad still needs to fire Mr. Is that what you said?
Boy, I ain't gonna say nothing. I ain't gonna say nothing at all.
No. I just checking. I'm glad we got the questions out there. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Bahamas. How you doing? I think this is perhaps one of the hottest topics in the Bahamas right now.
But is it a big topic, though, Erin? Is it something substantial that needs to be fleshing out?
Yeah, man. I think so. Okay. I think it's important because of the matter it revolves around, not just the approval or the approval process for the RCI project, but the minister indicated in her various statements addressing her position. There are a number of significant issues at play, concerns about the use and vision around Crown land, right, and its engagement, the direction of the tourism product. All of these things are extremely important in and of themselves, but I think this conversation allows us then to talk about a number of other things, right? So the matter itself, and then we get into parliamentary procedure, the political imagination, and the operation of politics and governance in the country.
And that's the overlying question right there. That same last statement, that politicking and politics and governance in the Bahamas, what is the standard and modus of operandi? And that's what we're going to investigate. But you have some housekeeping that you want to do before we start delving into our topic today.
Absolutely. I wanted to put the questions out there. I wanted to pique people's interest and sort of get them thinking. I think it's a fascinating discussion. But before we get there, you're absolutely right. There is some housekeeping to do. Mr. Nuri, let's start on a happy note. Let's say happy birthday to a bunch of people.
Go ahead.
I want to say good morning and happy birthday today to Ali Capron and Nadia Benaby. Happy birthday, guys.
Happy birthday.
I hope you all are having a wonderful day. Nuri?
I'm here, man. Happy birthday. I'm here, guys.
Okay. Cool. And happy belated birthdays to Jewel McKenzie, Onike Archer, Michelle Hanna, Stephanie St. Fleur, Jonathan P. Morris, and Ashley Sean Rule.
Happy birthday, Stephanie.
Are having a wonderful day. These guys, these people, they contribute to the development of the Bahamas in various ways. One thing I know is the Bahamas would not be the same without them, and I hope you all are having a wonderful day and you've all had wonderful birthdays and weekends. Before we go on to our topic, another note: the National Honor Society 2023 call for nominations is open for people who want to nominate people for honors in the local Bahamian honors system. The call for nominations are open, and you can find details about the nomination process in today's Guardian. Also, in today's Guardian is two announcements. First of all, the 1973 Masterclass series will be discussing the life and legacy of Sir Lyndon Pinlan on Friday, March the 24th at Bahama. Mr. Nuri, on Wednesday, I'm hoping that we're going to have a similar conversation on the life and legacy of Sir Lyndon Pinlan.
Yes, we need to have a conversation on that, Aaron. Definitely.
Oh, without a doubt. On Sunday, the Dame Doris Johnson National Women's Unity March and Concert, they're going to be marching from Bank Lane to the Western Esplanade. But I wanted to say, I'm hoping that we will also have the publication of the 50 women being honored for the 50th Independence Celebration. But I don't want it to be released then, because I don't think there's been enough time for people to consider who they would nominate and then to complete the nomination process. So I'm hoping that the Independent Secretariat will extend the call for nominations for 50 women, honoring 50 women for the 50th Independence, and give us some time. I also want to call on the Independent Secretariat to ensure that they are using all of the mechanisms available to them to not just engage the Bahamian public, but to make these events as accessible as possible. I want to suggest reaching out to Junkanoo groups, campaign generals, right, and pastors and church communities, religious communities, to organize their members, their constituents, the people in their networks, to assist them to get out to these events, to get out to the march, right? People want to participate. The question is, do they have enough time to mobilize themselves and organize themselves? And I hope that there's enough time has been given for mechanisms to organize companion or complementary walks in the Family Islands, right? Not only do we have to figure out how to do this governing thing, but we have to figure out how to do it across our archipelago and ensure equitable and equal access to ensure accessibility for every Bahamian. And so I'm excited about this week of activities, Mr. Nuri. And this, guess what? On Sunday, I think it's, on Saturday, the 18th of March, it was National Child Exploitation Awareness Day. And National Child Exploitation Awareness Day aims to highlight the issues surrounding child exploitation, encourages everyone to think, spot, and speak out against abuse and adopt a zero tolerance to adults developing inappropriate relationships with children or children exploiting and abusing their peers. Child sexual exploitation is a form of sexual abuse that involves the manipulation and or coercion of young people under the age of 18 into sexual activity. And we like to call that grooming. That's what we call that, grooming. And so hopefully in the next 2 weeks, we're going to have a conversation about child exploitation and awareness and strategies to combat and reduce child exploitation. And not just sexual exploitation, but also financial exploitation and physical exploitation, particularly us older people who like to do things like call a child from the kitchen into our bedroom to tell them to go back to the kitchen to bring us something from the kitchen to the bedroom, right? Like that, not only is that exploitation, but it really diminishes or misses an opportunity to teach children critical thinking skills, spatial awareness, empathy. We're really creating an environment where, to use, you know, the young people term, these children can't live their best life. It just takes a little bit of focus and action, right, to eradicate these behaviors from our culture. So Mr. Nuri, are you ready for this discussion?
I am ready, but I want to pose some things to you. I want you to bear with me as I call bait you, right?
Yes, sir.
I want you to tell me, what is this collective responsibility? I have two questions for you. So I go, in your best intellectual, because you know I have you as the intellectual arm of our union. In your best definition, what is collective responsibility in terms of politics and governance of cabinet?
Collective responsibility means we all go down with the ship together. We all share responsibility and or liability for the decisions made in cabinet, for the decisions made by the administration. But it doesn't extend beyond cabinet. That's why having backbenchers is so important, right? That's why heavy or large cabinets, not only are they sort of financially prohibitive when you think about the amount of money and resources spent out to arm each cabinet minister, but it reduces the internal opposition and challenge to policy decisions, right? Once you're in the cabinet, you're obligated to follow the voting decision of the cabinet. But if you're a backbencher, you can object fear of penalty.
I have another question for you. As you know, the members of the cabinet, those who make up the cabinet, serve at the pleasure of the prime minister, right? Yes. I want you to define what the pleasure of the prime minister means. And yes, define that, because I'm going on. I got another question after.
A friend threw out a question to an anonymous lawyer who wanted to remain anonymous. They threw out the question, and the response was, if there is any breach of a ministerial code, the prime minister can always waive that breach, right? So I think it means that not only does the prime minister have to invite you into his cabinet, the prime minister has the final decision, or the prime minister can waive ministerial code, right? The prime minister can make the final decision on whether you should be removed from the cabinet, or should I say whether the breach, because I don't think the prime minister's, let's just call it privilege loosely. I don't think it erases the breach, right? I think it is a breach. But the prime minister has the power to say, hey, we recognize it as a breach, but it doesn't warrant this level of action.
I like how you mentioned he recognized it's a breach, but he has decided otherwise. But I'll let that come back later. And how does policy come about? How do cabinet makes decision in terms of, do they vote or one person gives a decision and say, this is what we plan to do?
Well, you know, when you used that phrase earlier, at the prime minister's pleasure, I am not sure. I cannot confirm if there is a outlined mandatory procedure, right, for decision making in the cabinet. I imagine that it is the procedure is what the cabinet will tolerate and what the prime minister will accept, right?
I like that. And so, what the cabinet would tolerate and what the prime minister would accept. And that's the conclusion. That's how policies are made.
All right. And I think that's where the balance is as well, right? Or where the balance should be, right? And so when I asked that question, you know, is Davis a Christie PLP or an Ingram PLP, right? And then the subsequent question, was PGC a cowardly leader or was HAI a tyrant?
But we ain't get there yet. We ain't get there yet. Because I want to set up the all the situations. So when I get to these questions that you
put. I got you.
Okay. My last question is, first amongst equal. What does that mean? Because I heard it churn around. First amongst equal.
Well, I think in the political culture, it means I in charge. I'm in the front. I win the spoils. But I think what it means when they say first among equals is I will take responsibility. Despite us making this decision as a collective, I will be the one to stand up and take liability, right? To be liable. I will take responsibility for mistakes made.
Okay.
Not just success is won.
So now let's set up the questions now. Recently, there has been a tentative decision for Royal Caribbean Investments, right, to build their infrastructure, their beach resort on Paradise Island. The Minister of Tourism and Investment made an announcement that, yes, they have accepted it. However, it's pending environmental studies, right? The Prime Minister subsequently announced that he expects them to start building any minute now, and soon, like it's going to be in the short term, plus not considering the environmental studies, right? We've had a number of ministers / PLP MPs who have, in the past, spoke out against the RCI project. One was Glenys Hannah-Martin. Also, the ambassador for CARICOM, Leslie Bryce, also said, man, this is kind of off. I should don't support it. And even the prime minister has announced, man, no, I don't support this as it is. The prime minister said that this is a new deal. They've created something different, something where Bahamians benefit more. Therefore, he has repositioned his position and have decided to move forward with this new concept of RCI. And then moving back to Glenys Hannah-Martin, she said, hey, I hear you all make adjustments, but no, my position is still the same. And we are now having a discussion on whether she breach cabinet procedures in terms of collective responsibility and having one voice. Or is this something that cabinet officials, cabinet ministers can do once they either publicly made a statement before or just say, I just have a different opinion? Can they come out and say it loud and clear, man, it don't make no sense what cabinet decide, and I agree with it? That's where I am right now, and that's where the discussion is.
Absolutely. Let me tell you what I find interesting in the dialogue, not between back and forth, but the dialogue from Glenys Hannah-Martin and Brave Davis, is that Glenys Hannah-Martin indicates in this article, Minister does not support RCI project, that you can find in the Nassau Guardian, right? In her initial statements and then in her subsequent statements in an interview with Eyewitness News, you know, she indicates clearly that this is a deal that we inherited from a prior administration, right? Now, that's obvious. So why do you need to say it? But I think when she says it, what she does is she gives the prime minister an out, right? She gives the prime minister an out to say why he would consider the the deal, even after making such strong statements in opposition? Well, it's because it's a different deal, right? It's a deal made under a different administration with a different party. And I found that interesting, while at the same time, you know, staking her position, entrenching her position, that she doesn't support it. I just found that interesting, and it made me wonder if this is an orchestrated distraction.
Interesting.
You know, if this is orchestrated to distract, or orchestrated to create a particular narrative, right, that sets the prime minister as being a savior. Like, how can you be a prime minister and still be a Robin Hood?
Interesting.
Right? Why would you need to work the system if you are the system?
But Aaron, earlier I asked you how cabinet decisions are made, and I was hinting whether they vote for it, whether this RCI deal was voted and supported by the entire cabinet or the majority of the cabinet, right? And then cabinet, not the prime minister by himself, but cabinet came out and said, yes, this seems to be a good deal that we renegotiated, and they believe as a unit that we should go forward. Is that the case? Because now when we see that the likes of a Glenys Hannah-Martin who say, no, I don't support it, more likely she voted against it. I want to know if any other cabinet minister voted against it, right? And can I publicly go and ask them, hey, did you support this deal? Because I would like to ask Ms. Price, who was upset with it earlier, did you change your mind? Or because it's a better deal, of course. Or are you like a brave and brazen and daring woman like Glenys Hannah-Martin and say, no, I see the tweaks in it, but it's still not a good deal for us. I want to know if any other minister can say that they still don't see it as a good deal for the Bahamas. Or is it just Glenys Hannah-Martin and she's the wayward one who completely off, because the majority of people saying, how come you can't see that this is a good thing for the Bahamas and this is a different deal? How come you can't see? How come you're so blind?
You know, that's fascinating, and I doubt that we would have access to that information. Not the question of whether they vote, but what the vote was. Without a Freedom of Information Act.
Can we ask them?
And I wonder if Glenys spoke publicly in an attempt to defend or in some way express that the objection is louder or larger than can be expressed in our political system.
Interesting.
What if there were more that voted against it, but don't feel themselves in a political position to express that in public?
I would go as dare and say, what if 60% was against it, but the first amongst equals said, man, I am first. That ends that. Let's go to the environmental impact now.
Absolutely.
Should we be concerned in terms of democracy?
Well, I mean, if this is where you get concerned, sir, then I have a letter for you. I am still wondering, when will we have a formal publication on the public disclosure process this year? Will it be gazetted? Will the names of those who missed the deadline, the initial deadline, and possibly the secondary deadline be published? Will they not just be brought before the prime minister, but will they be processed by the provisions of parliament?
And Aaron, I still remember, serve at the leisure and the pleasure of the prime minister. They could be brought in front of him, and he say, "Maps, I hear it," but I decide to go a different way.
It's not a matter for him. It's a matter for us, right? And it's unfortunate that it appears as if the chairman of the commission does not see himself aligned with us, the people, but sees himself aligned with the political class, because he is our last bastion, right? But I say that to say that as long as MPs and cabinet ministers feel that their allegiance to their party and their administration is more important than their allegiance to the people, to Parliament, to the Constitution, then we'll never know. We'll never know how these decisions go. We'll never know what really happened. We'll never have the information we need to make real critical decisions in the future.
So let's go back to the question that you sent. First question, Aaron. Who is asking for Glenys Hannah's Martin resignation and why?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, Mr. Newry. Before seeing the press statement from the opposition party, the FNM, yesterday, I couldn't imagine who was calling for, I couldn't imagine who would be calling for her resignation. Now that I've seen the press statement from the FNM, I am stunned. I'm stunned that they are calling for her resignation, because I don't get the impression that the FNM are concerned or care about parliamentary procedure, executive procedure, any of these codes. I don't get the impression that it matters that much to them unless it presents an opportunity to attack their opposition.
So, in essence, you believe that this was just a nugget that they don't necessarily want a Glenys Hannah Martin fired, but they want to analyze the point that a breach was made?
No, I think they want to fire. I think they're looking at any.
They like her.
And so
everybody likes Glenys Hannah Martin.
They like her, but I haven't even seen a public invitation to join the party.
Okay.
Right? I think they will take any opportunity to destabilize what they perceive as their opposition.
Mm-hmm. Next question. Should a Philip Davis prime minister fire Hannah Martin for breach? And was there a breach made? Let's start with that first. Was there a breach? And then should he fire if there was a breach?
Listen, I think if my taxpayer dollars could be used, my taxes could be used to fund the office of a deputy prime minister and a car and a plate, then no, you can't fire Glenys Hannah Martin for reiterating something that she expressed while in opposition. I don't think you can. I don't think you can and get away with it. I think it will have great, significant both political ramifications, and it'll have significant ramifications for governance. I don't think Brave can afford to fire Hannah Martin. I don't think the Bahamian people trust at this moment any other MP with the Ministry of Education, right? I don't think they trust. I think it's tenuous at best now, and I don't think he can afford to do that.
I see you mentioned the Ministry of Education, and in the letter written by the Prime Minister, we note that he mentioned what is happening in the Ministry of Education. Now that I'm listening to what you're saying and then putting that juxtaposed to the letter itself, explaining, one would assume that he's between a rock and a hard place and he decides, man, I got to support this woman. She's doing a great job. And I plan to ignore any other infractions if need be.
I think that's the most important question for Brave Davis is, can he afford to fire Hannah Martin, right? Can he afford the disruption within the party? Can he afford to upset Hannah Martin's supporters? Can he afford to upset the supporters of the AD Hannah legacy? But then I got another question. It's a really heavy question, right? Does he have to fire Glenys Hannah Martin to preserve the Davis-Cooper administration? And I use the term Davis-Cooper because I've heard it being used as recently as last week in the media. I imagine.
I'm noticing that now. They've moved the term. The PLP is creating new terms anyway. First, the office of the spouse and they expand the role. But now they have a hyphenated administration. Usually it's just the administration of the leader and everything falls on the leader. But now they have a dual leadership, which is suggestive that If the prime minister decides to step down, one would assume automatically the current deputy prime minister, which I think would be issued.
Stop.
Look where you're going.
Stop.
You know?
First of all, it's no automatic.
No
what
automatic?
It's not automatic.
There's a team.
Not only is there no office of the deputy prime minister, there's no automatic matriculation. This ain't like the old Ministry of Education where social promotion was the order of the day.
But there's one. This is Davis Cooper. This is not no Davis.
No.
And Cooper. It's Davis Cooper.
No, you might as well throw away the whole Westminster system then. You're almost there. I don't have a problem with it. But if you're gonna do it properly. If you're gonna choose something else, understand it and do it properly. But let's be careful, because I'm gonna say, how could brave Davis fire a Glenys Hannah Martin in the age of Trump, right? A Trump who is still not just vying for POTUS 2024, but has not yet been disqualified through his actions, right? From vying for candidacy for POTUS 2024. And this is the same Trump who last week said he expects to be arrested this Tuesday as New York law enforcement prepares for possible indictment. Right? Mm-hmm. If we are prepared, if they are prepared to bastardize the Westminster system, and we are prepared to accept the bastardization of the Westminster system, why is it that all of a sudden now everybody is so certain about why Glenys Hannah Martin must be fired? Now, just as I say that, let me say this. I'm supposed to start a discussion with this, Mr. Newry.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Bahamas, let me declare my bias. If I had to choose a team and it couldn't be team me, it would be team Black people. And if it couldn't be that, it'd be team Africa. And if all of that couldn't work, I may just go for team Glenys Hannah Martin. I'm going to declare my bias. In fact, I'd vote for Glenys Hannah Martin PLP if I didn't like to spoil my ballot so much. Because I can't help but imagine what 25 years of a Adiana folks or a Whitfield Adiana administration would have looked like.
Aaron?
So I put my bias on the table.
Aaron, what if this is a political step for Glenys Hannah Martin to say that if the opportunity comes up, she will challenge for leadership, and which will stop this Cooper automatic secession of a brave Davis. Perhaps this is her way to say, man, I'm independent. I think differently. I'm letting the Bahamas know. Ain't no automatic transferring of power could happen here. I plan to challenge for leadership. Perhaps this is the stepping stone right there.
What if I'm throwing this way out of Exuma, like left, that's right field. Way out of right field.
From Exuma.
Yeah. What if Cooper is the person, what if the Cooper team, let me retract the first part of that statement. What if the Cooper team is pushing for Hannah Martin to be fired?
That's a conspiracy theory.
Because Hannah Martin is the only viable challenger for leadership. Cooper, I'm not dissing him. I'm not saying that he's not a worthy candidate. I'm saying, should he stand before Glenys Hannah Martin if there is a hierarchy?
Listen to this text. Gratio, as usual, you think they would ever fire one of the founding fathers of the PLP daughter? People need to get real.
I like the text, but I will never forget not just what they did to Glenys Hannah Martin on the convention floor, but what they allowed to be done to Glenys Hannah Martin on the convention floor.
Well, the same thing would happen to Loretta Butler Turner. Any woman who planned a challenge for leadership, they get put in their place. It's a culture of who we is. See, that's good.
There you go.
You didn't expect that one, eh?
No. I mean, at least...
You put a woman out there and see what happens.
No, because, listen, I got another question, right? The question that I had was, what about LaRota and NIB, SAERS and BPL, the AG Pinder and the marital rape legislation and the cannabis legislation, and Obi Wilchcombe and the marital rape legislation. Why are we only calling for Glenys' resignation? Now, mind you, I will note there were calls for Sayers' resignation. I will stick that there. But I'm looking at LaRota, and I can't believe that LaRota is not just still sitting as a cabinet member, a cabinet minister, but the FNM haven't demanded his resignation or that he be fired. From I got a list of articles from the Nassau Guardian, primarily the Nassau Tribune, and Eyewitness News, starting from April 13th, outlining LaRota, Cabinet Minister Miles LaRota's call for an increase in national insurance rates. In fact, he has, in spite of the Prime Minister making what we presume...
He's challenged the Prime Minister all the time. Go ahead.
Right. First article, Minister expects NIB rate increase. That's the 13th of April, 22. Second article, LaRota says NIB rate increase cannot be circumvented. That's the 7th of June, 22. While acknowledging that the Davis administration has decided not to deal with the issue of increasing the National Insurance Board contribution rate at this time. 28th of June, 2022, LaRota, we need to face reality on NIB. 14th of July, 2022, LaRota, NIB is in disinvestment mode. July 18th, 22, government has made no decisions on how to save NIB fund. 26th of October, still no decision on saving NIB. 8th of February, government approves NIB rate hike. All the way to 13th of February, PM suggests government, listen, until Pintard gets into the discussion on the 15th of February, and says, well, this is the Guardian, says that Pintard was, you know, goosey in the prime minister for contradicting with the minister with responsibility. I found that hilarious because is Pintard suggesting that the proper ministerial code is that the prime minister, equal among equals, right, should aim to align with the proclamations of the ministers responsible and not force them to fall in line with the prime minister's vision. I just say it. I thought it was fascinating.
It is fascinating. But what you are suggesting, especially with a litany of examples, is that perhaps there's a runaway cabinet in the PLP because they're doing, there are a number of cabinet ministers doing whatever they want. And we saw that, we see that LaRota continues to challenge the prime minister. The prime minister has made a statement, has put a position regarding NIB, and at every turn, LaRota goosey him and say, no, man, the prime minister is wrong. The prime minister ain't making no sense. This is completely opposite of good governance. This is LaRota continuously to do to the prime minister, and he ain't get fired yet. Or no one asked him to resign.
Listen, even Shane Gibson jumped in the mix to defend the prime minister, well, to defend the policy of the cabinet or the non-policy of the cabinet. We're just not quite sure. We listen to the cabinet. LaRota, though, he's talking. But in an article from the Nassau Tribune, the 16th of February, 23, Shane Gibson, NIB increase inevitable to save fund. 7th of March, we can't kick the NIB can down the road anymore. That's Miles LaRota. And up to Friday of this weekend, just gone, Eyewitness News had a headline, LaRota, pace of NIB rate increases over the years not sustainable. So despite the prime minister saying that they're working on it, despite the prime minister saying that, you know, he has to find an option that doesn't put the burden on the Bahamian people, Minister LaRota keeps kicking this can down the road. I'm just saying, I could say I'm Team Glenys, but how can you warrant firing Glenys if you're not going to fire LaRota for what can be labeled as rank disrespect,
and disregard
for cabinet policy?
Something wrong. Aaron, we got to take a quick break. But I see where you're going, and I agree with you. This is On the Clock with Aaron Green, and I'm sitting in the studio while Aaron is home via Zoom, and we'll be right back.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. Buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Want to reach your Grand Bahama customers? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Nassau Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Can't hear myself. Okay, and welcome back to On the Clock with Aaron Green. This is C.A. Nuri, who's in the studio, whilst Aaron Green is on via Zoom, and we are analyzing, comparing the the double standards on how people are asking for Glenys Hannon-Martin to be resigned or fired, and Lerodo, who has challenged the Prime Minister repeatedly. All the time, always goosey him, always highlighting that something is wrong with this decision regarding NIB, is allowed to languish there. But Aaron, what you were saying last? Go ahead.
So we ended with the list of statements up all the way up to this weekend, and we're still not certain what the way forward is with NIB. And so, you know, I think what we the Bahamian people need to ask ourselves is, are these contradictions, or is this how cabinet should function, right? Should cabinet ministers be able to express a degree of disagreement or variance from the center line? Is this healthy governance, right? Is politics bastardizing what should be a healthy process? Is this a part of the danger of the supermajority, the supermajority government? Is this a danger of a supermajority cabinet where you fill your cabinet with MPs to diminish their potential or power to oppose you within the administration, right? Or is this the sign of a bumbling or uncoordinated administration?
Interesting.
Right? Because we, the people, as an element of government and of governance, need to understand what the problem is so we can understand how to fill the gap.
But Aaron, I put this to you, moving forward, now that Glenys Hannon-Martin has spoken, voiced her opinion, should media seek out the opinions of all the ministers and find out what is their position, especially how we found that the final position or final decision to continue with this RCI project has yet to be done, has yet to conclude. That means it can be stopped, I assume, right? But even though they say pending the environmental impact, can a majority cabinet say, well, we really don't like this, stop this project?
Absolutely. The government could stop the project at any time.
You're saying government?
You know,
this
very
talk about first amongst equals and who in charge, right?
Right.
The cabinets follow one.
The cabinet could also remove the one. The same way Loretta Butler and the Saad Six removed a sitting leader of the opposition, you can do the same thing in the administration. You can remove a prime minister. The question is, do you want to destabilize, right? You want to disrupt the perception of political stability that our financial services industry and tourism services industry relies on for high ratings. That's a totally different question, but it can be done. But I like your idea. The media should engage every cabinet minister and ask them for their voting position. It leaves the cabinet minister to then say, I am unable to express that, which then leaves us, the people, to ask why. Who is your allegiance to? And how will you balance your duty to cabinet and the first among equals and your duty to the party and your duty to the Constitution and your duty to the people who voted you in? And we get right to the nitty-gritty.
The general election, the last general election, proved that Glenys Hannah-Martin is the most popular PLP MP in that party. She got the most votes in her constituency compared to any other MP in the Bahamas. She solidified her vote, right? I wonder, what does that mean in terms of ever putting her in her place? And I hate using that term. I'm using it just for this conversation. Can Mr. Davis ever put her in her place? Or she can do whatever she wants. Darn well, please. Hey, I can say what I want.
Well, I hope that the prime minister does not operate within that sort of political culture. What I also hope is that Cooper sees the value of supporting Glenys Hannah-Martin as a potential Davis successor and fulfilling the role as deputy again, right, for another term. That's exactly what I said. That's exactly what I said. I think the wisest thing for the PLP would be for Cooper to recognize Glenys Hannah-Martin as the best successor and to stand with her and in support of her as her deputy for the next 5 to 10 years. Until he feels anarchy. Prepared to lead.
Anarchy. That's what I'm saying. That's anarchy you're trying to suggest. I don't know where you get that from. But if you're sowing seeds, I know if I like what is fruit. The seed's going to be
like
there.
I say, I declare my bias
Cooper
from
next.
The beginning.
Cooper is next. People are concerned. Say, you hear what Aaron said on the text lag? I say, yes. I say, Cooper next. This is the Davis-Cooper administration. Cooper next.
I wonder what people are feeling or thinking when they hear the expression Davis-Cooper administration.
The people used it. They already said
and that. And that's why I asked the question. Is Davis a Christie PLP or is Davis an Ingram PLP?
I don't know if anyone like Ingram type of style of management anymore. We've transcended that. We need more accommodating.
I think people don't like Ingram anymore, but really want his style of management in another figure.
But you know when Ingram left the F&M, the whole thing just fall and collapsed because it couldn't survive without him. Well, at least with a Per Christie administration, they had other leaders being groomed. And they still have several leaders there that can take over. That Ingram administration was a vacuum and killed the entire party. We don't need that no more.
I think the real question for both of these parties right now is, have they focused sufficiently on a secession plan? Or have they been focused entirely on seizing and not letting go of power? Because as much as the people cry for new leadership, I'm not sure if these parties have empowered their own members, right, to take the lead.
This text around.
And so the question is, can the PLP afford to fire Glenys?
This question said, remember, Glenys Hannah-Martin was the only one in Nassau to win a seat. when the Effernan won Swept the Coast in 2017. I wanted to end with that. This has been On the Clock with Aaron Green. This is C.A. Nuri. And I enjoyed the show. We got to do this again, Aaron. We got to analyze it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Especially with Laroda challenging the Prime Minister at every beck and call. But anyway, I end with that.
Yes, sir.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Have a wonderful day, Bahamas.